Good morning, church. How's everybody doing this morning? Yeah, we're good. Well, hey, you made it to the end of summer, all right? Your kids, I'm sure, have driven you a little insane, but guess what? School is right around the corner, so be thankful for that. You made it. Mom is hurting this summer, I can tell. But, man, we are excited to be here. I'm excited to be with you here at the end of July as we kick off a brand new series called House Party, all right? In this series, we're going to take the next couple weeks, and we're going to ask some questions about God and just saying, well, what would it be like if our relationship with God was more like a party and we had more moments of a party-type feel instead of maybe some feelings about distance with God, or maybe coming to church was actually something that we enjoyed and not something we felt obligated and we had to endure through, and how God's house party is something that everyone is invited to, that everyone is important at this party, and everybody is included in this party. It's going to be an incredible, incredible series because, listen, who doesn't love a good party? We love a good party, you know, because you're getting together, you're having awesome food, you're going to some cool location, maybe some cool restaurant, you know, some place where you can just let loose and you can relax and there's fun games. But what I think is the best part of the party is the people. You can't have a party without a people. Otherwise, it's just a glorified dinner for yourself. And you can do that if you want to. That's fine. But the people make up the party. And in order to get people to the party, you've got to have the right invitation. You've got to have the correct information on this invitation. You've got to know when is the party, where's the party, what day, what time, what type of party is it? Do I need to bring anything? Do I need to wear a certain outfit? Do I need to bring my bathing suit because it's summertime, right? We have to have all this correct information so that we can have a successful party. So if you think about it, information is powerful. Because once you give them this information, it's going to cause a reaction in how they act. Now, I've been invited to a few parties throughout the years, and I remember this one time we had a friend. She was throwing a party for her husband, and so she was telling me and my wife about it. You know, it's this place, we're this time, you know, this is what we're going to do. She gives me all these party details, and it sounds exciting. And then she just throws there at the end, and it's a surprise, you know, and I didn't hear that, okay? So the next time I see my buddy, I'm like, hey, man, you ready to party? And he just kind of looks at me. It's kind of weird. I'm like, oh, man, I think she told me it was a surprise. And so she hadn't talked to me since. But we're not talking about that today, okay? But listen, information is key. You've got to know all the facts. You got to know everything that there is to know about this party. And that means that information has power. And information, just in life, can create many different emotions, can it? It does all these different things. It can create joy. I remember when I bought the engagement ring that I was going to give to my wife. I bought it probably a couple months before I actually proposed to her. And I just remember I sat on the weight of that and just saying, man, once she realizes, once she knows, once I tell her that I want to commit to her, that I want to spend the rest of my life with her, hopefully she's joyful. You know, she was. We've been married for a while now. But I just knew that information was going to change her life. And I remember when we got pregnant for the first time, and it was around Christmas time, and so we were going to do all this and make it cool for both of our parents. And I just remember thinking, man, this is going to change their life. They're now becoming, you know, grandpa, like Rambo up here. You know, he's grandpa now. He's excited, all that. He's just smiling all the time because that information, once you realize that another human is coming into the world that's a part of your family, it just changes everything. Information does so many different emotions, though, doesn't it? I can't imagine being a doctor, having to walk into the waiting room to tell somebody the results of an unsuccessful surgery, or reporting after an accident, or having to give a diagnosis because that doctor knows that this information that he's about to give is going to change their world. It's going to rock their world and change it for the rest of their lives. And information brings about change, doesn't it? You hear those words, we want to offer you the job. Or we decided to go in a different direction. Or you're being transferred to another state, so you're going to have to uproot your life and move over here. or maybe you got accepted to the school, or you got declined from the school. So information can really charge how you live your life, how you set your goals, things that you want to accomplish, things that you want to pursue based on things that have been told to you. And so you think about it, information is powerful, it's important. And through this series, especially today, we believe that there's a message that we have here at The Bridge, that there's information that we have here that is more powerful than anything that you'll hear ever in your life. That if this information is communicated clearly, that it can impact not just a group of people, but an individual, that it can connect to an individual and change their lives forever, for eternity. That this information, once you get it and they receive it and they hear it and they just have that aha moment, like, oh, that's how it works. Oh, that's who God is. Oh, that's how He sees me. That's how He loves me. And everything just kind of clicks. And once it clicks, because of that information, because of that message, and it's been received, you see everything differently. You see life and death differently. You see your marriage differently. You see your workplace differently. It just changes everything that once God takes His world and gets it inside of our human heart and our soul, that it has such a lasting impact. And it drives what we do here at The Bridge. It drives because we know that this message is so powerful. Because the beginning of the summer, we baptized nearly 100 people across our two campuses. 100 people said, I believe in Jesus and I want to tell the world about it. That was such an incredible time. And then earlier this month, our students went to student camp. We sent 200 students down to the bay, and guess what? 15 of those kids heard the message and received Jesus for the very first time. This is such a powerful message. And here's the awesome thing about this message, that it's not just for students, that it's not just for children, that it's not just for adults, it's not just for Americans, it's not just for this hemisphere, it's not just for English-speaking people. Here's the great thing about this party, is that the Christian message is for everybody. It's for everybody. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter who you are. And again, we think that this information, that this message is so big and it's so important, that God's house party is the most important party that you could be a part of. It's the biggest party that you could be a part of. And those of us in the room who have received this message, we remember what that was like. Remember the first time that you trusted in Jesus and just how you started doing everything different. You started seeing things different. You started acting different. It changed how you parent your kids. It changed how you talk to your parents. It changed how you worked. It changed how you did things in your marriage. It was communicated to you in such a way. Somebody created an environment for you, whether it was a lunch or whether it was in a big room like this, where it was just simple. The invitation, it just clicked with you. And you've grown and you've learned more about who God is and the character of God. But that invitation, that initial invitation was simple and it was clear. And that's what we want to talk about today. We want to talk about that invitation and what does it really mean to come into a relationship with God? How does God actually set that up? Because we want to make it as clear and as possible. And the passage that we're going to be in was written by a guy named Paul. It's going to be in the book of Romans. And what he does here, he just wants to make it as practical and as logical as possible, as simple as it can be, so that there's no questions, there's no doubt that you know what it means to be good with God. So if you've got your Bibles, if you've got the Bible app, we're going to show it up on the screen here. Man, take some notes, because this is the core of the Christian faith. If you consider yourself a Christ follower, you're just kind of checking it out, you're going to know the basic truth of Christianity today. Because again, it was written by Paul, and he's going to be repeating himself. You're going to like, okay, Paul, we get it already, you know? But he wants to just make sure that you know, so that there is no question, that there is no doubt that you know what it is to be in a relationship with God. So we're starting in Romans 3, starting at 21, all right? But now a righteousness. Now, we got to stop immediately, okay? If you want to just fly through these verses, you're going to be frustrated today, okay? But now a righteousness. Now, this is a church word. okay? This is a word that you could probably guess what it means, but this is the basic summary of what Paul is about to tell us here. So we need to know, what does righteousness mean, all right? And this is what it means, okay? Righteousness is a right standing. They're going to show it here in just a second. But righteousness is a right standing with God. That's simple. It means that you're right standing. What does it mean to have a right standing with someone? It means that you're good. Everything's fine. There's no weirdness. There's no junk. There's no awkwardness when you show up with somebody. Like, oh, man, it just feels weird. No. You have a right standing. And so if somebody were to ask me, how y'all doing? We're fine. Well, how's your marriage? We're fine. We're good. And so a right standing with God means that you know you're not perfect. You know that you have struggles, but when it comes to your relationship with God, you know we're good. I know that I'm still a child of God. I still have a relationship with God. And so he keeps going in the verse. He says, but now a righteousness from God. We got to stop again. Because you've got this right standing with God, and then he says it's from God. Now this is huge. This is huge information that we need to understand. This is who the God that we serve, this is who it is. This is who he is. So we need to ask this simple question. Where does a right standing with God come from? Where does a right standing with God come from? Y'all are theologians. Y'all get it, okay? It comes from God. It's simple. You've got this right standing with God that comes from God. All right, verse keeps going. But now a righteousness from God, apart from the law, has been made known. Has been made known. This means that this is brand new information here. This is something that he's introducing, that it's apart from the law. Now, what that means in our culture means that we got to earn it. And as Americans, we're like, yeah, well, you got to work for it, man. You got to do what you got to do. And it's easy for us for this to be confusing, because we think that, man, we got to do it right. We got to earn this. But what he's saying is, no, a right standing with God is apart from the law. But I think we're confused because from a very early age, this is how we've been brought up. I mean, remember back in first grade, they don't mark all the right ones. They tell you what you did wrong. And then in second grade, and then all the way through high school and college, what gets the most attention is what's not right, is what's wrong. And then you move into the adult world. I mean, has anybody ever gotten a letter from the government saying, thank you for paying your taxes on time? They don't do that. They're not like, Marshall, we just want to thank you for paying your taxes on time. We think you're an incredible human being. You're a great American. You should be expecting a phone call from the president in the next 10 to 12 business days. We just want to thank you for doing that. That does not happen. You don't hear from them if you do it right. When you do hear from them is if you miss a payment. Then they're all excited about getting to know you. Then they're like, hey, what's up? I'm the government. You owe me money. So we just kind of conditioned to know that, man, what gets attention is when something is wrong. And so it's easy for us to be confused with this when it comes to our relationship with God. Because we think, well, if I'm doing wrong, then that must mean I'm not good with God. Because I have to earn a right standing with God. I have to do everything right. And so we try to just make sure that all of our ducks are in a row because we want to be right with God. But Paul's saying, no. A right standing with God comes from God, not based on anything that you do. And he says, you even got some hints in the Old Testament that the law and the prophets testify that it's more of a gift relationship than an earning relationship. And he keeps going in 22. He says, this righteousness from God, he's repeating himself, okay? He's going to do it a couple more times, trust me. Comes through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. There is no difference. So you got this righteousness from God comes through faith. Now, the verse before, we saw that word law, which means you got to earn it. But now Paul says, no, there's a new way. There's a new method to having a right standing with God, and it's through faith in Jesus Christ. And look at the next part. To all who believe. Again, this isn't just a Western Hemisphere message. This isn't just for people who kind of got their life together. He says, no, all who believe in Jesus, you can have this right standing with God. Doesn't matter who you are, where you've been, what you've done, commitments you didn't follow through with, promises you didn't keep. He says, you put your faith in Jesus, you are good with God. And look at this last phrase. There is no difference. And here's what that means. He's like, there's no distinction. It doesn't matter who you are. But we can kind of wrestle with this for a minute. Because in our minds, we know some good people. Right? We know some not so good people. We know people who are close to God. But you don't know my story. You don't know how messed up it is upstairs. You don't know that I struggle with certain things. That there's inconsistencies within me. That there's anger within me. There's lust there. There's conversations that I've had about other people. We just think I'm bad. I'm the worst person that I know. I mean, if my steering wheel could talk, you wouldn't even let me in the door. If my shower head could testify because of the conversations that I've had to let that person know where they are in my book. We know what goes on in our mind. And so we see this, that there is no difference. Like, I'm bad. I don't think I can have a right standing with God. There is a difference in me. But what Paul is about to do, he's about to level the playing field for everybody. He's saying, listen, there's something that doesn't matter how many commandments you follow or don't follow, that there's something that's going to level the playing field for every single person on the planet in the history of the world. And he says this, for all have sinned. All have sinned. All have messed up. And that's what sinning means. It's simple. It's just to do something wrong. You've all done something wrong. If I were to ask for people to raise their hands, like, who in here is messed up? And you're like, this morning? Couple. 20. All right. Right? We all have sinned. We can agree with this. This isn't a controversial statement. But Paul says, I don't care how good you think you are, we've all sinned, or how bad you think you are, we've all got something in common no matter where you are in life. And this is what happens because of this. And fall short of the glory of God. Because we've sinned, we've fallen short of the greatness of God. It's like this standard that God has that we can't meet. We can't meet that standard. We have fallen short. His standard is perfection. And we can't do that because we all have sin in our lives. And even if you live your life perfect from this point on, you still have an imperfect past. You still have blemishes on your record that you can't make up for. It's not like you can be extra perfect. It doesn't work like that. How can you go from being imperfect back to perfect? It just doesn't work. So think of it like this. Think of it like this. How many of you have ever been running through an airport so you don't miss your flight, right? If you nod your head or raise your hand, you're irresponsible. It's okay. No perfect people allowed. But listen, I've never missed a flight in my life. And it's not because I'm necessarily responsible. It's because I'm scared to death of just missing a flight. I don't know what to do after that. I guess I would have to walk home. I don't know. There's one time, though, that I did find myself running through an airport. And I was with my good friend Joel Owens. He's a family pastor here. And we were on a mission trip. In Morocco, we had a short layover in Paris, and then we were coming home, okay? So Morocco got a little delayed. I don't remember what happened. They had to get this lady off the plane or something. And so, like, I'm sweating a little bit because I know how fast that next departure time is in Paris. And so, again, we were with a team, all right? We had about 10 or 12 other people that we were with. And so we were the first ones off the plane, and we just kind of looked at each other, and we didn't want to wait on anybody else. So we just took off and started running. And it was so funny because, you know, we're trucking it. You know, we're out of breath because we're out of shape. And, the Paris airport people are like, you in a hurry? I'm like, we're Americans. We're always in a hurry. Get out of my way. Get me through security, right? And so the guy who he was in here first hour, I apologize to him, but it wasn't my finest moment, but I got on the plane, you know. And so I remember, though, I always get there really early. And I don't care if I get there early, you know, I can read, actually just play games on my phone. But I'm there at my gate, and I remember this one time, you know, all the gates are next to each other, and the gate next to mine was about to close up and take off. I mean, they're putting their stuff up, and the guy's got the door, and you just hear this, wait, wait, and this lady is trucking. I'm doing this because she has her hands full. It was just like a disaster scene. She's, wait, wait. But what happened, click, they just shut the door anyways. And so in my mind, I'm like, man, that's messed up. But let's watch what happens, okay? Because the lady's just like, wait, wait, wait. I mean, the plane is still there. It is. There's not even a guy outside doing this, okay? It's there. They just simply shut the door. And she's coming up. She's like, I have to be on that plane. I have to be there. I have to get home to my kids. There's a job opportunity. It's worth thousands of dollars. And so she's just giving all these sob stories. I know she's making up half of them. But she just wanted to get on the plane. And while she's doing her thing, another guy runs up. He's like, did I miss it? You know, because I see the plane, you know, and I'm watching this scene kind of play out. And after about 5 minutes, there's like five or six different people. And I'm like, who are all these irresponsible adults and where are they flying to? Because I'm just thinking, man, there's somebody that was seconds late and then somebody that's 10 minutes late. Well, because the lady was first and, you know, she was only a few seconds late, who do you think they let on the plane? Nobody got on the plane. Nobody got on the plane. Once that door shut, it is over. And so just like sin in our lives, it doesn't matter if we're only a couple seconds late or 10 minutes late. We compare ourselves to other people, and other people compare themselves to us, but the standard is the glory of God. We're not comparing ourselves to the right standard here. We think, well, I haven't killed anybody, haven't done anything too bad, and we just kind of go through life hoping that it all just works out, right? We just kind of think, well, you know, maybe God will, you know, he'll give me a break. He's a loving God. You know, I didn't kill anybody, right? Because murder is always the standard, right? Well, I didn't kill anybody, so I'm a good person. And we think, man, at the end of my life, I'm just hoping that God will give me a break or he's, you know, grading on a pretty large curve there. And that's not the case. God says nobody. All have sinned. All have fallen short of the standard. There's nobody that's good. Nobody that's perfect. And so we got a real problem here. But listen, the righteousness from God through faith now in Jesus for all who believe, even though we've all sinned and even though we've all fallen short. And look what he keeps going. In the next verse, he says this, and all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. And justified is just another word. It says, you're now good with God. You are justified. And look at that next word, though. Freely. You know what freely means? It's free. It's not complicated. It's a simple word that we have this problem. We have this debt. How many of y'all been in debt? I know everybody because we're Americans. We like to owe people money, okay? He says, we have this debt that we now have because we all have sinned. I mean, say that you owe me $50, but you don't have it, okay? I got to have my money. Well, somebody else shows up and say, here, I'll pay. I don't care who gives me my money. I just want my money. How many of you have gotten a speeding ticket before? The city does not care where their money comes from. If somebody offers to pay that speeding ticket for you, they just want their money. They just want the debt to be paid. And so God is saying, listen, I've got to have my money. I've got to be paid. He says, but you are going to be justified freely. It's not going to cost you a thing. There's nothing that you have to pay, even though you've fallen short of the standard. You're imperfect. You don't meet the standard. I'm providing my son Jesus. We call him the Savior because he saved us. He says, listen, I know that there's a gap now between you and God, and I'm going to pay that for you. It's not going to cost you anything. It's free. This isn't a scam. This isn't I'm going to go talk to my manager and come back with another deal. He says, no, I'm just giving it to you. It is completely free. And then Paul goes even a step further. Look what he says. God presented him, again, it's from God. Okay, God presented him as a sacrifice of atonement through faith in his blood. Like, what does that mean? That means here, he presented him as a sacrifice. When you kind of fell out of sorts with God back in biblical times, you had to provide a sacrifice, whether it was an animal, whether it was a crop, because you knew that you weren't good with God. You didn't have a right standing with God. And we know what that's like. We've gone through seasons where we felt alienated from God. Maybe we had a bad day. Maybe we had a bad moment. Maybe we're having a bad life. And we just think, me and God are on opposite sides of the room now. We feel disconnected. Maybe we shouldn't have gone on that trip this summer. Maybe we shouldn't have spent that money. Maybe we shouldn't have gone in when they invited us. Maybe we shouldn't have returned that text. And we just get this feeling that something is missing. we're lacking something when it comes to our relationship with God. It's just not right. And so what we do naturally is we try to make up for it. We try to make up for it, and we're like, you know what? I'm going to both services tomorrow. I mean, you might be here this morning because of what happened last night, and you're like, I got to make sure me and God are good. You're driving slow everywhere because, you know, if you get in a wreck, you don't know how it's going to turn out. And you're thinking, I've got to come to church because you know that something is missing and you got to make up for it. And so you might even have that attitude in how you serve. You think, well, I just got to serve, and be involved in as many ministries as I can because I owe God something. Or maybe that's why you give. Like, I better give something because God is he's owed and he needs to get paid. I need to make this up. And let me tell you, that feeling is legit. That is a real feeling that something isn't right because we've got this sin problem, this disconnect from God. That is a real issue. But God says, you know what? I'm changing it. I'm changing the game. I'm going to provide that. I'm going to give it to you. There's nothing that you have to do. It is absolutely and completely free. So now that you can approach me, and not feel weird. You don't have to dodge me. You don't have to feel like you have to fly under the radar. You can come to me in confidence because I've made it right. Your sin cannot separate you because the cross in Jesus eliminated that from the equation. Sin is no longer going to keep you from me. I've taken care of it. And as parents, we can relate to this. Because I know when my kids have done something bad, and they're at that age now where they know they've done something bad and they think that dad's mad at them, they try to butter me up a little bit. And my middle daughter, Noelle, she does it all the time. You know, she just spilled something somewhere she shouldn't have been. She's like, Daddy, I love you. You're the best dad. You're better than Captain America, Dad. And I'm just like, it's sweet. And I'm like, yeah, come on, give me those, you know. But it's funny because I just want to look back and say, if you knew how much I love you, if you knew what you meant to me, you wouldn't feel the need to do this. And I just want to look back and just say, you're my daughter. Or look at my son and say, you're my son. You're in. We're good. You have a right standing with me. And God just looks back at us and he says the same thing. He says, you don't have to feel like you need to make it up, first of all, because you can't. But secondly, I've already provided that. You can come straight to me. There's nothing you feel like you need to do to make that up. I so love you. And I sent my son for you. And Paul, he's going to wrap this whole thing up this way. He says, he did this. He presented the sacrifice. He gave son Jesus as a redemption. He did that to demonstrate his justice. Because in his forbearance, he had left the sins committed beforehand unpunished. He did this to demonstrate his justice. God is a just God. People ask, well, why did Jesus have to die? Why did he have to go through that? Why couldn't they just been like, boom, fix, party? Because there was sin. There was a debt. And that debt had to be paid. These sins have to be paid for. And he says, I'm a just God. And beforehand, before Jesus came on the scene, he's like, there's a lot to make up for. These other sins have been unpunished. And so Jesus is dying for all the past sins, all the present sins, and then all the future sins that we have. And he comes back and he says this, he did this to demonstrate his justice at the present time, so as to be just and the one who justifies those who have faith in Jesus. Guys, this is an incredible verse. This verse is so freeing because God is just, so he has to pay for the sin, but he's also the one who justifies it. He says, you've messed up, it's your fault, but guess what? I'm going to give you that right standing with me by sending my son, and all you have to do is have faith in Jesus. It's completely free. You don't have to make that up. And some of us, we're still like, yeah, but I don't know if I can come to this party because, I mean, you know who I am, right? Yeah, I know. You know what I've done in the past. Like, it's on Facebook. You can look. I know, yeah. Well, you know my kids are bad. Yeah, we know, right? We know that you haven't been there. Well, you know that I still have questions. I still have doubts. I still have certain issues with certain things. And you're saying I can still come to the party? You are still invited. You are still invited no matter who you are. You don't have to go to bed one more night wondering if you're good with God. You don't have to go to bed one more time thinking, well, what if I don't wake up tomorrow and I'm in front of God? I mean, he says, no, I've wiped that out. You can know 100% that me and you are good. Why? Because that's what my son Jesus did. The cross paid for everything. There's nothing extra. And once you put your faith in that, you 100% don't have to wonder ever again and know that you are still invited. And the cool thing about this party is that it changes you. When you show up to this party and you're involved and you're in the right standing with God, it changes you, because what I've learned about people is that forgiven people usually offer forgiveness. That accepted people, despite what's going on, end up accepting other people. And they become generous, and they become loving and compassionate. And no longer are they dealing with the stuff that they, the anger issues, the hate issues that they used to have, because they're at the party. And they know how bad that they were, yet they were still invited. And so now this is urging them on. This is directing their lives. This is guiding their paths now and how they live. And this party isn't just for the end of the world or the end of your life. No, this party is going on right now. This party is happening right now. You don't have to wait for someday. You can get involved right now. The gate has not been shut. It is wide open. The plane has not left. God says, you are still invited. You can come to the party. I've paid the bill. I've supplied everything that you need. You just need to show up so that when you show up, you can simply enjoy me. You can enjoy my love, my grace, my forgiveness, my design for community. You don't have to worry about paying anything. This is free just for you. Now, why would you not want to go to that party? Why would you not want to be a part of that? And if you have been to that party and you're at that party, why wouldn't you want to invite everybody that you know to that party? Because it's the most incredible thing that we could ever imagine. It changes you. It's that information that just changes you. And it's what guides this place to reach whoever we can, whether it's a child, a student, a young adult, if you've been divorced, we don't care. This message is for everybody. And we know that you are always invited, because that's how God set it up. And you might be thinking, you know, maybe you've heard something today that just clicked. And you're like, whoa, I didn't know that about God. Or maybe you're coming in here thinking, you know, like you and Jesus kind of have this tag team relationship of like, yeah, well, you know, sometimes it's me, but then when it gets too crazy, that's when I call on Jesus, you know. But, sometimes I can handle it myself, but I only need God in certain situations. Well, let me explain it like this. We're going to call this the chair of trust, all right? This is your trust in God. And if you're in this room this morning, you might be here where you know it's there, you've heard about it, but you're like, you know what? I got this. I'm gonna take care of it. I've been through some tough times, but I'm going to be all right. Or maybe you're here. You still got one foot on the floor, and you think, sometimes I can do it, but man, if things get a little too crazy, I can always rely on Jesus, right? If the sickness comes back, I can rely on Jesus. If the bills get too backed up, I can rely on Jesus. But for now, I'm good. What if you put your whole trust in Jesus? Because that's the way to do it, because that's how he's designed it. He says, you don't have to put anything in. Just put your full faith, your full trust in me. Yeah, but no, I've got you. I've got it. But what, I know. Put your foot all the way in the chair. This is full trust in Jesus. This is what it means to put everything, to put your finances, your kids, your marriage, your salvation, your eternity comes in putting your full trust in Jesus. And we're talking about house party, talking about being invited. we would be crazy to have this time in this passage of Scripture and the things that we've talked about. And if you're in here and you've never accepted that invitation, or maybe you've never heard about that invitation, we want to give you an opportunity to accept that invitation. Because this is the best party, the best invitation that you will ever receive. And here in a few moments, I'm going to pray. And I would love, if you want that, to pray with me. And it's not the prayer that necessarily saves you, but it's the trust, it's the belief in your heart that it's only God. It's just Jesus. I have nothing to do with this. That's the attitude of your heart. And if you have accepted that, I would encourage you to pray with me, to pray for these people who might be right there. They're right there and they're like, yeah, I kind of get it. It's their moment, like, oh, that's who God is. Man, so everybody, let's just bow our heads, close our eyes, and man, listen, again, if you're in here and you've never accepted that invitation, or you've never even heard of that invitation, it is there for you. And you can just repeat this prayer, okay? Just say, God, I've sinned and I've fallen short of your standard. God, I understand that there's nothing that I can do to make that up. God, I understand that you sent Jesus as a sacrifice for me, that you paid everything. God, I put my faith, my trust in you. God, thank you for that grace. Thank you for saving me. Thank you for paying that debt that I could not pay. Jesus, I trust in you. In your name that we pray. Amen.